Blog Talk Radio.
Young Trace.
Yeah, that's our intro music.
Okay, good evening, and welcome again to Living From Within. This is Ruby and
Ethel.
Yeah, Ruby and Ethel once again coming to you, and today we are just so excited. We once again have a special guest, Dr. Michael Rice. Those of you that have been with us a couple of times know that he has been on our show before, and he first appeared on our show on October the 4th, and Dr. Michael Rice is the founder and director of Heartland, which is a self-healing center in the Ozark Mountains. He is a dynamic speaker. He's much sought after for his skill in teaching the practical application of self-help tools. He's also the author of the international bestseller, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And What You Can Do About It. The book includes an understanding of how to forgive, how the mind works, healing guilt and fear, the human energy system, the cause and healing of pain. James Redfield, who is the author of The Celestine Prophecy, describes the book as poignant and totally on target. Michael's work can shift your life forever, and we are certainly in agreement with that. And today we have a special treat. Michael is doing a live workshop in Spartanburg, South Carolina, so he's allowing us to get the benefit of that today. So we're just really excited. And we have with us on the line someone who is with him there.
Marianne.
Hi, Marianne.
Okay. Hello. Hello, hello.
And we're just going to give it over to you.
We're turning it over to you, Marianne.
Thank you so much, Ruby and Ethel. I'm having a most amazing experience right now, knowing that Michael's going to be speaking. He's here with Jeannie, his wife, and
yes,
we are so blessed to have him here. So we're excited and we're enthusiastic about what we're going to learn. I know because 20 years ago when I first met Michael, it was a life-changing experience. I had the opportunity to go to Heartland, the resort, which I fondly refer to as the last resort because I was in an amazing time in my life, and it had the great distinction of transforming, and it was through Michael's teachings that I have the honor tonight of introducing him. So here's Jeannie, his wife.
Hi, this is exciting to be able to do this live and on the air and here in Spartanburg as well.
Gina, can I interrupt one second?
Sure.
You know, I want everybody to know, Michelle, our friend, says she's getting paper and pencil together when she heard it was going to be Michael Rice. So I just want to tell the audience, you might want to take notes. We got notepads here, so just keeping that in mind. So go ahead, Jeannie.
That's awesome, yes. And also for the listeners on the radio, the people here in our audience are going to be receiving worksheets later, you all might want to go to the website, which is www.whyagain.com, and you can download the worksheets that we're going to be talking about tonight and do that at another time. We're going to be extending beyond the time limit that we have for the radio show, so you might want to do that at a later time. So for right now, I'm going to start by opening up saying that any of you that have not listened to Michael before, he's going to present a lot of information, and he talks fast, and you might get into a little bit of overload and think, I'm never going to keep up with this, but just be assured, you know, just to relax and take in, you know, you'll get what you need to get. It reminds me of in high school, I took Spanish and French, and both instances, after the day or two, it was like, what am I doing in this class? I'm never going to get this, but I hung in there, I hung in there, and at the end of the class, not the first class, but at the end of the session, I was able to speak it, write it, listen, understand.
Yeah.
And even now, years later, not using it, I can still recall some of it. So you'll get what you need, and hopefully, though, you'll use it. But you'll be able to recall what you need. You'll absorb it. So when I say using it, how many of you in the room here and also there on the radio have a toolbox at home, even if it's a can with a screwdriver and a hammer, okay? All the hands are going up. Mm-hmm. Right, if you never use a tool out of that toolbox, it's the same as if you don't have tools. And so that's what this. Michael's going to present a tool and saying, oh, okay, I got it, I understand it, isn't going to do you a bit of good. You have to use the tool. And then you'll see phenomenal changes in your life. So I'm going to start out by asking a couple of questions that require feedback, and I'm going to ask the audience that's here to give me answers, and I'll repeat them so that you can hear them on the radio. And but go slow enough that I can write them down. How many of you have ever held a newborn baby? Just about everybody. Okay, go back to holding that newborn and tap into its essence. Not that it was crying because of the way it was jerking to the world, but the essence of the newborn. And put a word to it and give me your word. Slow enough that I can write. So serene and love. Miracle. Holy. Innocent. And we like that one as inner sense. Slow down. Beautiful. Blessing. Joy.
Awesome.
Connected. Gift. Angelic. Light. Pure. That's a pretty good list. Notice that every one of these descriptors is some variation on the theme of love. I offer that this is your being. It's the stuff that you're made of. It's who you are. We have forgotten that, I think, a lot of times. Now I'm going to ask a second question. How many has ever done something that now you regret that you did it? Oh, only about half. The rest of you don't need the workshop. Okay, I'm not going to ask for a confession. Just okay, get in your mind one instance when you did something that now you regret that you did it. And think of what you were feeling at the time that you did whatever it is that you did. And give me that feeling. Anger. Guilt. Shame. All right, is excitement really what you were... A high? Okay. It's a chemical buzz, okay. Betrayed.
Illegal.
Afraid.
Worried.
Hurt.
Fearful.
Hopeless. Disappointed. Lost,
not connected.
Okay, that's a pretty good list too. Notice that every one of these words is some variation of the theme of either hostility or fear. And I offer that this is non-being. So what has to happen to take us from who we are, the beauty, the blessing, the joy, and all of this, to become betrayed and shamed and anger and fearful? It's a lot of thumbprints. You know, we come into the world and then there's all these expectations and all these things and we take it on. I think back to a few years ago, Michael and I served at the Salvation Army during Thanksgiving. Excuse me. And most of the people that were there were street people. And this one lady particularly stood out in my mind. She had on everything that she owned. I mean, she had on shorts and pants and shirts and skirts and sweaters. And I mean, she had so much clothes on, she looked like the Michelin Man. And it was so warm in that room, and she was sweating. And, you know, it was like, take off some of the stuff, you know, so you can be comfortable while you're eating. And there was no way, because that was all she had. She felt protected by having that, and she was not letting go of any of it. So that's what we've done. You know, this is who we are, our being, the love, the beauty. That is who we still are. That's what we came into this world as, and that's who we still are. But we've layered it like she was layered with all this clothing. We have layered ourselves with the anger and the guilt and the fear and the worry and all of this, and we're afraid to take it off and let it go and to get back to being. And what Michael is going to present tonight is a tool for taking off the layers and to get back to who we are. And so I'm now going to turn it over to my wonderful husband and teacher, Michael Wright.
Thank you, sweetie.
You're
welcome. Yay. Yay, Michael.
Yay, Michael.
All right. Well, the workshop we're about to do tonight was originally designed to be a two-week workshop. And it was difficult to get people to sit still for 2 weeks, so what I've done is cut it down to 2.5 hours. I'm going to ask you to listen fast. I'm going to cover a lot of territory very quickly. And what I'm going to cover, by the way, for those who are listening on the radio, if you go to the website, if you look under downloads on the right-hand side of the page, there's about the third thing down on the list is a chapter 24, a newly revised chapter 24 of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? You go to the website and download that free. That will give you the instructions for the worksheet that we're going to do in the live workshop that we're going to lead up to in the next hour. But because we've only got 1 hour on the radio, you're not going to get to hear that worksheet. But the instructions are there. Just go to the website, download it, and tap into the energy of it. So the work that we're about to do is to look at why and how we got to the point where hostility or fear tends to govern our culture and govern our world. For those, again, who are on the radio this afternoon, there were two speakers who preceded me at the event we're doing here in South Carolina, and one of them alluded to things that happened very early in life and maybe before. And my input would be that we carry in our structures literally the energetics of every generation that has gone before us. You know, there's a story in the Old Testament that speaks about a guy named Moses who wandered in the desert for 40 years. Does anybody know why Moses wandered in the desert for 40 years? Mm-hmm. You ladies all know. He wouldn't stop and ask for directions,
he
right?
He was a man. He wouldn't stop and ask for directions.
That's it. You got it, Ethel. But if you look in the scriptures what they said, and that story isn't about some old fogies in the desert several thousand years ago. That's the story of our lives. And what they said was that in order to move from the desert, which is a code word in the scriptures for the unconscious, into the promised land, which is conscious co-creation, what they said was there was an event that had to happen. Does anybody remember what that event was? They said the old generation had to die off. Now, that did not mean everybody in old physical bodies had to physically die. The root of the word generation is genari, which means cause. All of the old causes held, yes, right down to and into the genetic structure had to be removed because each of those things is a frequency, an energy that produces a result. If we go to the opening words in the book of John, and we're going to synthesize a lot of disciplines here. If we go to the opening words in the book of John where we're told it says, in the beginning was the Word and the Word became flesh. In the original Aramaic language, what it says is, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. If you break down the word organize, what turns into organic structure? Mind energy turns into organic structure. They understood that 2,000 years ago. If we come full circle and we look in the cell biologist laboratory today, there's a fellow named Bruce Lipton, who's a cell biologist, medical researcher, and here's what he's showing. Is that when you think a thought, that thought produces a molecule called a neuropeptide. The neuropeptide circulates around in the structure until it finds a cell with a receptor site that matches. The neuropeptide lands on the cell receptor site, locks into it, and the cell replicates the neuropeptide chemically. And you get to live with the chemistry of your thoughts. You get to live with the chemistry of your thoughts. I get to live with the chemistry of my thoughts. If I blame you for the fact that I think a certain way, then I don't get to change my thoughts because I've given you my power. Blame is nothing but a way to give away your power. You've got to stop playing the blame game. You've got to start to take responsibility and step up to ownership if you're ever going to throw out what does not belong. In the ancient Aramaic language, getting rid of the old generations was called forgiveness. Forgiveness has nothing to do with letting other people off the hook, because there are certain frequencies in your structure, things that you've engaged in the way of thought that produce feelings that you find to be painful. Painful feelings are nothing but a warning signal that you're engaging in a creative energy that doesn't belong in the human structure. But what we tend to do in our culture is we play this game of denial. We say, I have nothing to do with this. This is all your fault. And we deny ownership. When we deny ownership, there's an interesting thing that happens in the human mind. That is an instruction set that says to the mind, hide this, suppress this information. About 95% of brain chemistry is tied up in inhibiting brain cell firing, keeping things locked down and suppressed. That's why we have an unconscious. If you look at some of the best estimates of how much of the mind do we as human beings use, they say 3 to 5%. Why? Because 95% of it is locked down because of denial and suppression. And here's what happens. There's some great Harvard research that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, the max amount of information that goes into producing your reality, the world that you see, is 9 bits of data. It's been estimated in the same time frame there are approximately 20 trillion bits of information potentially available. So we look at a 20 trillion bit world, 10,000 brain cells fire, we see 9 bits of data. And we think we know what's going on out there. What shows up in your mind, first and foremost, describes what's going on in your mind. It does not describe what's going on in your world. It describes what's going on in your mind. And if you live in denial of ownership of what's going on in your mind, not only have you inhibited your ability to change your own mind, but another mechanism kicks in. And that is that by holding that which has been denied, we store these energies, and each time we deny and suppress them, we add energy to them. I had the privilege about 20 years ago of getting to do some work with a fellow named Marcel Vogel, who was a 23-year senior scientist from IBM. Marcel had the instrumentation in the laboratory with which to take a picture of the high-energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought, literal, measurable energy waves. And we live in a world of resonance, that is, matching energy fields. You might remember in physics class in high school, you hit a middle C tuning fork on the desk, it started to vibrate. You put it in front of a second middle C tuning fork. What happened to the second tuning fork? Started to vibrate. Didn't have to touch. Because it was a matching atomic magnetic structure, there was an exchange of information, and the secondary that had no motion to begin with began to vibrate without being touched. If you vibrate somebody into your life, where do you suppose the vibration that draws them to you comes from? It comes from the strongest field that emanates from your mind. What are the strongest fields that emanate from your mind? The thoughts that flit across them about how nice it would be to have a wonderful world, or the rages and the hatreds and the vengeances that get denied and suppressed and denied and suppressed and have been denied and suppressed for perhaps 1,000 generations? Back in the ancient Aramaic, where they understood how this energy system worked, they said the sins of the father. By the word sin, the way the word sin in Aramaic is an archery term. It has nothing to do with your identity. That's a sales job. That's a con job to keep people in fear. That's a con job to keep people in negativity. That's a con job to keep people out of their being, because people who are not in touch with their own being are very controllable. They make great servants. They're wonderful that way. They don't ask many questions. They do what they're told. They turn over all their pay, and they live on almost nothing. That's why it's been promoted as a sinner. But the word is actually an archery term. When you fired at the bullseye and missed the bullseye, the scorekeeper yelled sin, off the mark. The word sin simply means an energy that's off the mark. And when we engage in an energy that's off the mark, we store that energy holographically in every cell in the structure, including, by the way, the sperm and the egg. So were you to conceive a child tomorrow, that child would have in its structure every thought you've ever thought, every feeling you've ever felt, every reality you've ever engaged in. Why did they say the sins of the father would be passed to you into 3 and 4 generations? I can remember being a kid and thinking, that's not fair. Why would God do that to me? Punish me for what my father did? For what, all the way back to Adam? No. Nothing to do with punishment. It's just a descriptor of here's how the energy system works. If you engage in an energy, the structure is designed to store the energy. If you don't ever throw the energy out, that is, forgive it, then it will carry on forever in your bloodline. The energies that you decide to uncover and address and remove or forgive from your bloodline will be freed from. The ones that you reinforce and won't deal with will be reinforced and passed to future generations. So when they said the sins of the father passed the end of 3 and 4 generations, they were describing the storage capacity of this physiological system called a body-mind unit to hold information. And that information, if it holds pain, most people want to stay away from it. So again, they deny, they want to hide it, they suppress it. Imagine that here on the floor in front of me, there's a 3-foot diameter spring that stands 3 feet high. Can that spring sitting on the floor do anything? Nothing. But what happens if I push down on it and lock it down? And push down on it and lock it down? And push down on it and push, I get 3 or 4 of you big guys to come up here and, hey, help me really crank this thing down and lock down. What happens when I let the spring go? Through the ceiling, right? If your generations have been denying their rage, their sadness, their grief, their pain, their hatred, especially in this for the radio audience because it's very relationship-oriented, especially in your relationships, what do you suppose you're going to have experience of in your relationships? It's going to be those energies that have been stored for so long. Because what will happen is, by holding a particular frequency and denying and denying and denying, you strengthen the power of that energy that radiates from you. Guess who's coming to dinner? It's going to be somebody who has the matching bag of garbage. And in our world, relationships based in matching bags of garbage are called love relationships. How can we tell if you've ever had a matching bags of garbage relationship instead of a love relationship? Has anybody ever had a love relationship that's turned, a so-called love relationship, that's turned to a hate relationship? Anybody ever had one of those? I would offer it's absolutely impossible. A relationship that is actually based in being, that is actually based in love, can never be anything but that. However, relationships based in matching bags of garbage can turn to hate relationships in an instant. All it takes is for someone to frustrate a goal you hold for them, and your bag of garbage you will dump on them faster than you know what on the farm. And it's time for us to start to be responsible for that process in our lives. Because if we don't deal with it, then that which is hidden draws somebody in. And once they're drawn in, they are going to do a behavior that matches what we drew them in with. Oftentimes this is done totally and completely unconsciously and totally and completely against one's own will and choice. Has anybody here ever gone into somebody's space totally committed to being loving, nurturing, caring, and all of a sudden found yourself functioning like a mad banshee? Anybody ever done that one? What happened? Here's what happened. You were pulled into that space through resonance with their garbage. You got close enough to them energetically that your mad banshee broke loose and took over. And you did the very behavior that they sent out to you through that unconscious frequency that they denied and suppressed. Now, here's the trick that the mind plays. When you do that behavior, you fire brain cells in that person that they've been hiding from themselves. And they use those very brain cells that have been denied and suppressed to build their brain's image of you. You show up in their mind with your problem attached, and you think it's their problem. And now the game of look what you've done to me begins. We literally take the content of our own brain cell structure, and we build our brain's image of others' bodies out of what we haven't dealt with. That's called projection. Now, our culture teaches projection as taking something inside of you and putting it outside of you. That is not projection. That's externalization. Projection is what happens when you take something you've denied and suppressed and you use it to build your brain's image of someone else. And now all of a sudden, you think whatever's going on in your world is all their fault. I have a question for you if you've ever thought that way. Have you noticed that you've been through a particular painful reality 87 different times with 42 different people? And you were the only one that was there every time. Guess what that means? It's about you, it's not about them. And you can't keep functioning out of your unconscious dynamics, because if you keep doing what you always done, you're always going to get what you always got. You're going to have to do something different in order to get a different result. And the starting point for this idea, to me, is to understand very clearly the difference between reality and actuality. Extremely urgent concept to understand. For those who are on the radio, I have a marker in my hand. I'm holding a marker up in front of the audience. And I'm going to ask how many see a marker in my hand. Anybody here see a marker in my hand? Okay, let the record show most everybody says, yes, I see a marker in your hand. I'm going to challenge you. I do not believe you see the marker that's in my hand. If you could see the marker that was in my hand, we could turn out the lights, cover the windows, make the room totally dark, and you'd still see the marker. But if we extract all of the light from the room, what's going to happen to the marker that you say you see in my hand? It's going to disappear. Why? Because you're not looking at the marker in my hand. What happens scientifically when you say, Michael, I see the marker in your hand? Well, yes, I do have a marker in my hand. And because there's light energy in the room, that light energy bounces off of the marker and hits an antenna you have called the eye. Remember, we live in a world of energy. If we listen to Einstein, Einstein says this, on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy. Energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses, there is no matter. Matter doesn't exist. Matter's a fraud. Matter's a lie. Matter's a fantasy in the mind. It's nothing but a reality in the mind. We live in a world of energy. Until we get to that understanding, especially if we think we're scientists, we're going to live in a world that Einstein described when he described what science was in his day. And here's what Einstein said. When compared to actuality, our science is primitive and childlike. If we think that what we see between our ears is actually out there, we live in a primitive, childlike world where we are victims of everybody who can do it to us. Once we grow up and understand that between our ears, there's a thing called reality. When I hold this marker up, the light energy that bounces off of the marker and hits your antenna causes brain cells to fire, and your brain generates an image called a marker. That image, the marker you're looking at, is internal to your brain. It is unique to you. It is your marker. It is different from everybody else in the room. Let's see if we can simply document that. Let's imagine that we have one young man who, when he was small, went to school where his teacher was the teacher in the one-room school. And she used to use a whiteboard and markers. And she was a really good shot and an angry mother. And every time this kid turned his head or did something she didn't like, she'd fire a marker at him 3 or 4 times, almost knocking his eye out. 40 years later, sitting in this room, what kind of a marker do you suppose he gets to experience when I hold up the marker? Now, let's imagine we have a young man whose mother was a teacher in the one-room school, and he was an artist, and mom was an artist, and for years they used markers to create all these wonderful pastel colors and arts. What kind of a marker do you suppose he gets to experience when I lift up the marker? Is his reality different from our other friends? Absolutely. At every moment of your life, the output of your mind describes the content of your mind. It is unique to you, and if you don't like it and you want to be finished with it, you absolutely must learn to forgive it. No, you don't forgive mom for throwing the markers at you. That's called pardoning. It's a Greek act that was substituted for forgiveness. That will do that young man absolutely no good. He can say, Mother, I forgive you, I forgive you, I forgive you, until the cows come home. it's not going to change the content of his brain cell structures from all those times he was whacked in the head and in the eye and was beaten and abused over his markers. Only one thing's going to change that. That is, he's going to learn what the tool is and how to use the tool to reach into and remove from his cellular structure those energies that came from those experiences. I have a gentleman here who was at this workshop 19 years ago in the same house when I did it. He introduced himself tonight. And I'm going to ask you if you'll just very briefly, like just bottom line, the story that you shared with me that happened a week after you left that workshop. If you could just kind of quickly.
Sure. I was out delivering newspapers. I was thinking about your workshop, Michael. I remembered you urged me to forgive. I said, who do I need to forgive? I thought of Steve Bruce. Steve, I hope you're listening on the radio tonight. And Steve and I had had a little conflict in high school. He'd poked me in the chest with his finger. I did a little Michael's work. I imagined Steve on a river floating away. I released Steve. I stopped at a restaurant. I had not seen this guy in 23 years to drop off some newspapers. Steve was sitting in the restaurant. He said, Pat, you don't recognize me, do you? I said, no, I don't. He said, I'm Steve Bruce. Stuck out his hand, shook hands with me.
23 years.
Wow.
I tell you story after story after story where we attract people that we haven't dealt with or that we have dealt with, and when we choose to change the dynamics changed. By the way, the gentleman just shared the story. The other piece, little piece of the story I thought was kind of interesting. As he delivered these newspapers, this fellow was sitting reading a newspaper, and it was an old version. He said the reason he ended up interacting with him was he was inclined to go over and give him, hey, you want a fresh new copy of the newest newspaper? That's when... It's all resonance. It's all energy, folks. Nobody will ever show up in your life that doesn't have a gift for you. If you blame them for what's going on in your mind, you will not receive the gift. They are there to show you what it is that you need to forgive. And the things that you may need to forgive may be generations and generations and generations old. In the scriptures, again, when they said the sins of the father pass the end to 3 and 4 generations, if you think about that, if you go back 4 generations, including yourself, that's 31 lives. Think about the meaning of that. In your cellular structure is every thought, every feeling, every reality of 31 lives. Knowing what you've gone through, what your parents went through, what their parents went through, and what their parents went through. What's in your structure that you haven't dealt with? What's at the root of the output of your mind? Here I would offer is what you are designed to feel from. Your essential nature is being. It is what was described as a newborn. Now, I don't care where we've gone on the planet. This question's been asked of tens of thousands of people, and absolutely 100% of the time, the answer is always some variation on the theme of love. We are serenity. We are love. We are a miracle. You are holy. You are innocent. You are beautiful. You are blessed, joy, awesome, connected, a gift, angelic, light, and pure. But if you don't know that, it's because in your structure there's something else. Now, let's look at what that means in terms of structure. This being that we are is love. In the ancient teachings, they described, or they had a word that described one who lived from being. It was the word that described an office. It was not a name. It was an office. And the office was called Christ. There was never a man Jesus Christ. It was Jesus of Nazareth. Christ was the title of an office he stepped into when he awakened spiritually. It was not his name. Literally, in Aramaic, what the word means is the buttered one. They anointed an awakened spiritual master with oils, butter. So it would literally mean the buttered one. So you remember Paul said the goal of the work was to be of like mind with Christ. Remember, this isn't religious. This is just about where we live. The goal was to be of like mind with Christ. What mind did Christ think with? The mind of love, right? What is the mind of love? It is your birthright to think with the mind of God. One philosopher, Schopenhauer, says there's only one sane mind in the universe. One functioning mind in the universe. And I would offer it is not the mind of your body. It is this mind of love that permeates absolutely everything, and it's your birthright to live out of it. Now, if that's true, what would be the thing that could pull you out of, what would we call a different mind that could pull you out of this so-called Christ mind? What would we call that? One that goes against the Christ mind would be the Antichrist, right? This is not a religious idea, folks. It's where you live. Now, if you recognize what we've been speaking about, that what's stored in your cellular structure, what is your cellular structure made of? If we talk to a modern-day physiologist, they will tell you that your so-called physical body has as its base element carbon. Does anybody know how many electrons there are in a carbon atom? Six. Does anybody know how many neutrons there are in a carbon atom? Six. Does anybody know how many protons there are in a carbon atom? Does anybody recognize the number 666? It is the only thing, you know, again, those who want to keep us in fear have us believing out there somewhere there's somebody that's going to get us. That way we never deal with it and we're gotten by them, the ones who are supposedly promoting the awakening. The only Antichrist you will ever have to deal with is the one that's running around in your own heart. What is it made of? It is made of every hostility and fear that you've ever made up or bought into or engaged in. It is made of every hostility or fear of one, two, three, four generations. And where did the fourth generation back get their thoughts and feelings? But from the previous four. Who got them from the previous four? Who got them from the previous four? You've got your whole bloodline in there. That's what's structured in your carbon-based memory. Have you ever wondered why life gets so crazy? Because people are walking around with no idea that that's what they're sitting on. And that that's the root of the output of their mind. Now, not only that, but it is the frequency set that determines the condition of their physiology and the things that they're attracted to. You know, people talk about poor nutrition causing disease. Poor nutrition doesn't cause disease. Poor nutrition is a symptom of disease. When there's something we don't want to deal with that we've denied and suppressed, you can't get away from what you've denied and suppressed unless you weaken yourself. So one who doesn't want to deal with these hostilities and fears stored in carbon-based memory is going to automatically be attracted to something to weaken themselves. Lousy nutrition, drugs, alcohol, crazy behaviors to keep it all locked down. And the last thing they want anything to do with is that which will build their vitality back up, because the minute their vitality is built back up, everything has to come to the surface. And what comes to the surface are the internal realities. Let's go back to the marker again for a minute now. So the marker that shows up in your mind is your own unique and individual marker. The marker that's in my hand is actuality. How many of you have ever been in a courtroom where six different people testified about an accident and you wondered if any two were at the same accident? How does that happen? Everybody has a reality. Reality in the human's mind, until we've done the work of cleaning up carbon-based memory, seldom matches actuality. Seldom has anything to do with actuality. People hallucinate, that is, they see things that aren't there, and they think they're actually there. Let's see if that's true. Has anybody here ever been accused of saying something you absolutely never said or doing something you absolutely never did? Has anybody ever been accused of that?
Yep.
Those who have, if you'd hold your hand up. And I'm going to ask you to hold your hand up until I get to your number. How many times has it happened? Once, twice, three, four, five, six. An infinite number of times. Are they all liars? No, those people who accused you are not liars. When you came along and did the behavior that resonated the frequency they drew you in with, your behavior caused brain cells to fire in them. Those brain cells fired, and you showed up in their mind a reality they called you doing Not what you did out here in actuality, but doing what you resonated them that they denied and suppressed. And they now project the content of their brain cell structure into your brain's image of them. Now, lest you think it's all about them, remember the last time you accused somebody of saying something and they said, what are you talking about? That didn't happen. You do exactly the same thing all the time. How can you tell if that's what you're doing? There is a marker in human physiology that tells you when you're hallucinating. Guess what the marker is? It's hostility or fear. Anytime your mind is using any, and for most people this is about all the time nowadays, anytime your mind is using any form of hostility or fear to produce its reality, it is using corrupt data. Hostility and fear are markers for corrupt data. And every time the mind is using corrupt data, it is telling you a lie. You've had all kinds of people lie about you all your life. And you know what? They don't know they're lying. And you've lied about almost everybody in your life. And you do it all the time. If there's hostility or fear, you're telling yourself a lie about them. If they're in hostility or fear, they're telling themselves a lie about you. And guess what? That lie eradicates human life. In order for there to be human life in a so-called body, there has to be the active presence of love. You go into your relationships, and now I'm kind of turning to the folks in the radio audience. You go into your relationships, and you have this litany of things that your partner's done, and he's like this, and she's like that, and they did this, and they did that, and if only they'd be different. Guess what? You're the only one that was there every time. You've got to step into doing the work of cleaning up your life. Anytime your mind is using any form of hostility or fear, it is building realities out of corrupt data. The work of Yeshua was not a belief system, but rather a body of work to be done. And the body of work to be done was to establish yourself firmly in what was called the first law. Does anybody remember what the first law was? The first law was you've got to keep human life being conscious, active, present in your mind when you think of any one of three objects of attention. Nothing religious about this idea. What were the three objects of attention that they spoke about in the scriptures? There was God, there was neighbor. By the way, neighbor means anybody you think about. And there was self. How many have been in a church where you're told to do some form of hostility or fear about yourself and drag yourself down? Those people were teaching you to break the laws of God. They were not your esteemed ministers, as you perhaps were taught they were. They were teaching you to lie to yourself and to destroy yourself and to break the first law. They were teaching you to destroy human life. Human life is made of the active presence of love. Without it, you don't have human life. The man named Yeshua, who came 2,000 years ago, came to restore human life to human bodies. Most people have a human body and have no human life left because they've been so washed in hostility and fear. If we're going to actually take responsibility for our lives, the work of Yeshua says that you begin to address every hostility and fear and you begin to build relationships that will support you in doing that. And instead of opening your mouth and pretending that your hostile or fearful reality is true about someone else, you begin to enlist support in your relationship for cleaning those realities up. Let me do a demonstration. Jeannie, would you help? Let's imagine that Jeannie and I meet, and we're attracted to each other, which we are. And, of course, we come to this relationship, and each of us has our bag of garbage. I have my bag of garbage, which, of course, you know, we're going to relationships. I keep my bag hidden over my shoulder, and Jeannie keeps hers hidden over her shoulder.
Mine's little.
Yours is little, yeah. Everybody laughs because Jeannie's got this little tiny
3/10 of a bag of garbage.
It's your reality. So here we stand with our bags of garbage hidden, and we interact in relationship, and of course we have a great time together, until one day Jeannie gives me the look. Anybody got somebody in your life that knows how to give you the look? And of course Jeannie's look brings up what? Fear in me. Now of course I'm a big guy. I'm a man. I don't have fear. It must be her fault, right? So what do I say to Jeannie in that context? And think about it. Have you ever done this in a relationship? You really frighten me. Now, what have I just done? I have taken my bag of garbage, made a carbon copy, and attempted to put it in her bag. If she buys it, her bag gets bigger. Now, chances are she's going to have the matching bag of garbage. What might that look like?
When you go into that fear step, it really makes me mad.
And so up comes her anger, and where does she want to put it? In my bag. If I buy it, then my bag of garbage gets heavier.
Excuse me, Michael.
We establish that dynamic in relationship, I put my garbage in her bag, she puts her garbage in my bag, together we go to hell. And hell is life carrying bags of garbage. It is not a place prepared by a creator called love for you to go burn forever. That's another fantasy that comes from the Greeks. It's got nothing to do with the original Aramaic teachings of Yeshua.
Excuse me, Michael?
Yes.
I do, you know, I just have to alert you to a time. You got about, what is Ruby? You have about 7 minutes. I so apologize.
7 minutes. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's okay. I wish you could stay with us for the other hour and a half of the workshop.
Wow.
But please get folks to go to the website and pick up the descriptor of how to do the worksheet, because that's what we're going to get into next.
Absolutely, and I want them to do that. I mean, I really want them to do that. So you take this, you know, we can see this is not an accurate. So you know you got to come back, Michael. I mean, this is
Well, you know, also, Ethel, you had, when we talked last time and set this up, we'd spoken about you maybe putting a group together to come to Theodosia the 12th to the 15th. We've got a 4-day codependence to interdependence workshop happening at Heartland, which is only about a 9-hour drive from Chicago. So maybe put a carload. I actually talked with the psychologist up there that does a support group, Tim Hayes. He may be listening right now, and he may be interested in putting a group together to drive down to that intensive. So that'd be cool to see all at Heartland in about a week and a half.
We can certainly talk about this later, but we are going to still do the show on the 15th from the intensive, or we can talk about that later. But just to let people know, that is in the works, that this intensive workshop ends on the 15th, and we are anticipating doing the show live from your intensive. Is that kind of accurate?
Cool.
At this point? Okay.
12th to the 15th, and on the 15th, the show will be live. That'd be cool. Wonderful.
That's right. That would be
all
great.
Right. So let's go back to our demonstration. So Jeannie's got her bag of garbage. Mine's bigger. Hers is bigger because we're blaming each other for what's going on inside of us, and there's an inability to take responsibility for what's coming from our own minds. Now, the alternative to that, if Jeannie gives me the look and up comes my fear, is going to be for me to actually turn into an adult who speaks responsibly about the contents of my mind. Gee, Jeannie, when you gave me that look, that brought a lot of fear up in me. And I'd really love to work through this fear. Would you support me? I need help. I don't know how to do this.
Sure.
Okay, cool. And then Jeannie, if she's going to actually be responsible, actually act like an adult, what's she going to say?
You know, when you went into that fear, I really felt anger come up in me, and I'd like to work through this and be done with it, but I need some help. Would you help me?
Yes. So now I have a support team to assist in healing rather than an enemy to blame it on. Everyone who comes to you has the potential. The person who's the one who can show you your deepest, darkest, most denied, suppressed parts is the one who has the ability to support you through healing it. You've made of them a monster because inside of you is a monster called hostility or fear. They have a gift for you. And when you open to receive that gift, watch how those relationships transform. Watch how they show up. They change dramatically. Thank you, sweetie. So when we choose to be responsible, what happens is we start to have access to the mind, the parts of the mind that we didn't have access to previously. The minute that you go into relationship, you know, they warned us, don't be promiscuous, but they didn't really tell us why. It doesn't have to do with what genitals do. The reason they warned us about promiscuity is because they understood the energetic dynamics of intercourse. When you intercourse with someone, you just handed somebody your whole genetic structure, and they link into it. and you linked into theirs. How many have noticed that shortly after you intercourse with someone, all of a sudden, things started to change? Why? Because that person now has access to your unconscious. You now have access to their unconscious. You will become far better at knowing exactly how to give them a look and show them what it is that they need to heal. If people allow relationship to develop without taking responsibility for what comes up, what happens is it redoubles the insanity, redoubles, and we end up with people murdering each other, supposedly in the name of, I loved her, I loved him. It's time for us to wake up. It's time for us to learn to do something different than the insanity of the generations that have gone before us. And recognize that every minute that we are not functioning out of conscious, active, present love, there is work to be done. The work to be done is that of forgiveness. Forgiveness is the delete key. It's how you reach into your heart or your unconscious and you begin to remove those dynamics which never belonged in a human structure in the first place. You will find yourself getting to the point where you will be removing dynamics that happened to people a generation, 2, 3, 4, 10, 20 generations before you, because that's all stored within your mind. When you do that, in the ancient teachings, that was called, doing that work was called praying for the dearly departed. If there was someone who had left their body and left behind one of those dynamics that is now in your structure and you decide to work through it, you open the energy window that frees them from it. There was an ancient concept called purgatory. It's true. Energetically, people who leave their bodies without resolving the hostilities and fears that they carry with them are blocked access to the light by their hostilities and fears. When someone here on earth in a live structure does the work of removing those hostilities and fears, they open that person to that light. They remove what never belonged in a human structure. And that, I would offer, is the actual work of the man named Yeshua. By the way, his name was not Jesus, which is the copy of a Greek god Zeus, a junior god Zeus. His name was Yeshua. His work was about how do we reach into this carbon-based memory system and forgive what never belonged in a human structure. What do you say? We take an admission, we'll come back, and we'll get into doing the worksheet.
Okay. Michael, I just want to thank you.
You're right.
I'm going to finish this. These folks on the radio. Okay. Hey there. How'd that come across? Did you hear everything all right?
Oh,
right. Yes.
Beautiful.
Okay. Any questions, thoughts? That's the opening hour of a four-hour workshop or a two-hour workshop, depending.
But this was just remarkable, Michael. I so enjoyed this, and I think everybody else did. I'm so appreciative of your audience, and, I mean, it's just a really good feel. The energy is just great, and I just want to thank all of you. I'm so happy that we did this. So am I,
and it would be really fun to do. You know, our Codependence workshop will finish just about the time your radio show starts.
Okay.
On the 15th, so if we can do that live from our land, that would be really super. And that's the 12th to the 15th. If anybody wants to, you could maybe call into the show and see if there is a car being organized to go down to travel together. It's a four-day. It'll start Thursday night, the 12th, Friday, all day Saturday, finish about 5 o'clock on Sunday. And the whole event, food, accommodations, workshop materials, works, everything, gourmet vegetarian food, and the accommodations is a total of $500 for the 4 days. So very reasonable weekend if anybody wants to play. Touch in with Ethel, and let's see how it all comes together.
Absolutely. Please, livingfromwithin2@yahoo.com. You can contact me, www.whyagain.com. That's Michael Rice. So either way, contact me. Feel free, and I will certainly give you all the information that we need on that. I would also like to invite the audience to please join us next Sunday. We have a weekly show, blogtalkradio.com. Facebook.com/livingfromwithin. I know Jeannie has the information, so if you'd like to join us, we have provocative shows like this, and, I mean, it's just getting goodier and goodier. You know, I know my sister cringed when she heard that word. We love her. She's a teacher. So anyway, thank you again. Hello?
Yes, he hung up, but
okay.
She's back to, you know, his group, I'm sure. That was, man, was that good.
That,
oh, my goodness.
That
I took
good.
Some great notes, so I'm looking forward to next week, Ethel, because
yes.
we get a chance to just really discuss, you know, today's show with each other and with our audience. So it's going to be great if we get, you know, any, like you said, emails or calls that, you know, contact rather.
Yes.
And we can always include that as well.
Absolutely. Next week's show, let me just tell you a little bit about that. It's really, this is going to be about debunking some myths, the lies that you have been told. I think we're going to name, we haven't named yet, but it's probably going to be something, the lies you have been told and the law of attraction. And what that is about, we are just going to look at some issues that we have accepted as being true, and they were absolute lies. And one of them that we're going to accentuate, and Ruby just brought this one up, the struggle, how we have believed that we are supposed to struggle. We have a lot of mounting evidence that we're going to share with you. We were just told that stuff, and we fed into it. Life is supposed to be easy. We're supposed to have fun. We are supposed to feel good. So that's going to be, so keep a listen out for that, and it's going to be a really great show. It's going to really be good. We're feeling really good about this. We're going to get back to the law of attraction and how the thought thing, we're going to really pin that down in a way that we can absolutely get. If you have this thought, if it does not feel good, you change it. If you have that thought, if it does feel good, you go with it. So we're just going to come with some simple techniques, and like I said, you're going to really be influenced, because these are things that everybody can resonate with, that we have actually just believed all of our natural lives. And that's,
you know what, let me just jump in here real quick.
Please, go ahead.
Just from what Michael just said, just, you know, a few moments ago, can you think about back to four generations
right.
of gunk?
Wow.
You know, and he said 31 people. So we're carrying 31 people's gunk.
That's right. But not after Sunday, folks.
Nope. It's all over. Game over.
No more gunk. We are going to de-gunk next Sunday.
Yes.
So
yes.
And you're right, that really does go back. That's a very powerful statement, very powerful. And
that's,
I think it's going to be
message.
Very good, like you're saying. You know, we're coming off of Michael Rice, and we're just going to kind of dovetail off of some of the things we're saying. And keep in mind, you know how the word forgiveness, let it go. Whatever you're hanging on to, if it is a negative thought, if it's a negative vibration, a negative situation, turn away from, turn towards what it is you do want. Let that stuff go.
Got to give it up. Got to give it up, folks.
Got to give it up.
Must.
And we keep hearing that theme over and over again about this forgiveness. I mean, we got to stop and listen to that, because, it, you know, we walk around angry with other people. They don't even know we are angry with them. They don't even know we are upset with them. So we are just killing ourselves inside of us. So please join us again. The email address is livingfromwithin2@yahoo.com. We did not announce earlier, but we had planned to open the chat room tonight. So next week we will have the chat room open. We had it open, but we didn't announce it, so nobody knew that it was open. So, but anyway, any more information we need to give us?
Well, that's just pretty much going to be it. We're really excited about being able to talk next week. So you gave the email address, and the chat room, it is open. So we will have it again open next week. And that's it.
So So go
good
to our
show.
Yeah, good show. So go to our homepage, livingfromwithin.com, blogtalkradio.com/livingfromwithin, so you can get a description of next week's show. It will be available before Wednesday. It will be available before Wednesday. So anyway, it's going to be a great show. Have fun, folks. Feel good and have fun. It's the only way to
and
live.
And do that now. Have it.
Now.
Have fun now.
Now. Stop.
Enjoy life now. Now is all we have. So that's it from Ruby and Ethel, Living
yes,
From Within.
Is. Absolutely. See you next week.
Okay, that's it. We're off the air.
Bye-bye.